Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol. A little later on, we'll be hearing from Ian Dark and getting his Premier League predictions for the new season. But let's look back on the old season to begin with, Liverpool's that is, because it was a lengthy campaign for Jurgen Klopsman, the Premier League going right down to the wire in the final day. They also made the Champions League final. They won both domestic cup competitions, but cast your eyes along the bottom there. 63 days between the Champions League final and the Community Shield. That's 9 weeks, which is apparently not enough time for Jurgen Klopp.
I like the competition, but I think, again, here would be possible to find another date for it, maybe because we had a longer season than other teams, and now we have a shorter preseason than other teams, so it all it makes not too much sense. I think Germany plays the Super Cup final, and for that day, the teams who are involved don't have to play one cup round. There are opportunities, obviously, but maybe we can think about that, or somebody can think about that.
Let's now also welcome in Ian Dark and Shaka Hislop. But obviously, I'm going to start with you, Stevie. What do you think about what Klopp said there?
He's not the best complainer, is he? Listen, if you're going to complain about something, make sure that you're 100% spot on right about everything. And it carries some weight. I mean, seriously. He wants to change the date. Well, during the season, he's complaining. There was too many games and wasn't enough downtime. But he wants to play what is a pre-season friendly in the middle of the season. And if he wasn't playing this game this weekend, he would be playing another pre-season game somewhere else. So why do you need to change anything? It's a fundraiser that you're going to use. And he's only going to play half a team anyway, as he would in any other pre-season game. So forget that. As far as his team played a longer season than everybody else, and some teams had a short pre-season, some teams a little bit. Well, what about this crazy thought? The Champions League was a week after the Premier League finished, right? So, okay, you might, in a down year, you might have one more week to play than everybody else. But guess what? There was a million international World Cup qualifiers where every man and his dog was playing. So everybody's had the same amount of time. Everybody's played. And the very few that never played in the World Cup qualifiers ain't playing in the Premier League, because everybody's an internationalist in the Premier League. So I'm sorry, Jurgen, I love you to bits, but if you're going to complain, please get it right when you're complaining.
Imagine if the World Cup had been in the summer as well. What did you make of what he said, Ian? I see you nodding along.
I'm a bit fed up, frankly, of Jurgen Klopp moaning about the schedule. One of his favourite ones is to moan about 12:30 kickoffs on a Saturday after his team has played in midweek. But you know who sold the Premier League for a lot of money, and I mean a lot of money, and invented the idea of 12:30 kickoffs on a Saturday? Well, it was the Premier League, of which Liverpool are members. So if he's got a complaint about that, he should be going to his own chief executive and saying, we don't want these kickoffs, let's opt out of this part of the deal. So there's that, and then now there's this. I mean, the Community Shield has always been the pre-season curtain raiser a week before the season. I just don't get the point of moaning about it. They've got the biggest and one of the best squads out there. They can rotate players. And, you know, players moaning and teams moaning and clubs moaning about the schedule, you know, what's part of their preparation? To drag their players halfway around the world with jet lag playing to boost the brand. So I'm afraid it falls on deaf ears for me.
Are Ian and Stevie right, Shaka?
Absolutely. If Stevie's criticising Jurgen Klopp, you know there's very little for you to take exception to. I think key to what Jurgen Klopp said was that he likes the competition. And now, maybe things have changed and nobody told me, but certainly back when we were playing, the Community Shield, or Charity Shield as it was called back then, was just another pre-season friendly against good opposition at a really good venue. But nobody really takes it seriously. Nobody sees it as competition. As Stevie rightly says, it's another game in a build-up to the start of a season and should be approached as such. So to be complaining about the timing of it, I just don't get.
Is an up and down pre-season a worry for Jurgen Klopp? Has this contributed to him saying this, do you think, Stevie?
I actually have no idea how in his brain he could figure out the only thing he had to do was complain about this. There are so many things he could have talked about. There's so many things that maybe legitimately you could have a problem with. And probably the top of the list is what Ian brought up. Why are you taking my players halfway around the world? If I'm going to complain about fatigue already, then I need to look upstairs and go and have a word with them. So I don't understand how you can... The season's not even kicked off and he's complaining about fixtures. I mean, really?
All right, let me follow up with you then. Does this game lay down a marker for the season ahead, given that it is the two title rivals?
No, absolutely not. You won't see two first teams. And the Charity Shield, whether you play your first team or not, when you lose, it's always a great get-out for every single manager. It's a pre-season friendly, and it's the Charity Shield. And regardless of whether it's Liverpool against Manchester City or not, that's exactly what it is. And both sides, I do not expect both sides to play the starting 11s. I think the players who will open the season for both sides will play some part in the game, but it won't be at the same time. So, sorry if somebody's looking for a battle in this Charity Shield.
Don't you think, Shaka, it might be a little chance to send out a message to the other side?
I think it's a chance to send out a message for a team that has more to prove. And I'll go way back to my time at Newcastle when we lost the title to Manchester United. United also won the FA Cup. So the Charity Shield was Newcastle against Manchester United. And I remember post-game Sir Alex Ferguson saying that this was by far a bigger game for Newcastle, given the fact that we'd lost that gap at the top of the table coming into the new season. We wanted to put down a bit of a marker and the pressure told. And in the end, Manchester United won quite easily. I think it was by four or something of the sort. But in this instance, you have two teams who went down to the wire in the Premier League race. The team that just missed out also got to the Champions League final. I'm not sure really that Liverpool are under the kind of pressure that Newcastle were, what was it, 25 years ago. So I accept that there are times that this game is important for at least one team. I don't think that's the case for either of these two this time around. So, I don't understand why Jurgen Klopp is making the issue of it that he is.
Let me give you the perfect example of why I'm telling you that the Charity Shield doesn't mean anything. We lost the league title to Arsenal on the last day of the season in 1989. The last day. The next game we played was against Arsenal in the Charity Shield. And I can assure you, we weren't going out to try and knock them over, to beat them up, to get revenge because we'd lost the league. There was none of that at all. So why would this be any different with City and Liverpool?
All right, for argument's sake, and I won't say one or the other, what if one of the sides won 4-0? That's going to cause a stir.
No, absolutely not. As I said before, here's the get-out for everybody. It's a pre-season game, and we didn't play the first team. It doesn't count. You don't get anything from winning the Charity Shield. Nobody remembers who wins the Charity Shield, ever. So why did anybody think it's a big deal? It's not. It's only a big deal for the fans. Not the players, not the coaches, not the teams.
What about the commentators out there? What are you looking forward to with this game, Ian?
I think it's always quite a nice spectacle. It's something to whet the appetite. Stevie's saying they won't play their best teams? Probably not, but it'll be something like their best teams, because let's face it, instead of moaning about this game, it's kind of like an ideal sharpener for the season to play another very good team, in Liverpool's case, Manchester City, of course, who are likely to be in a neck-and-neck title race for them again this season. So I kind of think, you know, what's not to like about it, really? It's a good way of just getting you back in the mood for the Premier League season that'll follow a few days later.
Let's see what Jurgen Klopp had to say about Roberto Firmino as we do head into the new Premier League season. He said, Bobby is the heart and soul of this team. For me, there's no doubt about his quality. He's essential to us. Now, obviously, when it comes to those famous front three, Stevie, we know that the other two have cemented their future.
Yep.
Hasn't happened with Roberto Firmino so far. How important will he be to Liverpool this season? Is he essential, like Jurgen Klopp's saying?
If he was that essential, I'm not so sure they go and spend the money on Nunes. Or as much money.
Well, he's not coming straight in, is he?
Unless Darwin Nunes has no idea, and as of now, after being with Liverpool for, what, 3 or 4 weeks, how they play, then he won't start on the first day of the season. But let's be honest. If Jurgen Klopp had come out and said what he said 18 months ago about Bobby Firmino, nobody would argue with him. But for 18 months, pretty much, he's not been at his best. He hasn't been. And he ended last season on the bench. And rightly so, because when he was playing, he didn't produce what he had been, as I said, up until 18 months ago. So I think this is just, he's trying to be nice to Bobby Firmino, but he's not exactly telling the truth, let's be honest. I don't think Bobby Firmino's first on the team sheet the way he was 18 months ago.
Well, it's in World Cup, yeah, the end of this year. Obviously, the World Cup's coming up, Shaka, a new contract to play for. There could be more to this.
Yeah, there could be. I just think that this is really good man management from Jurgen Klopp. Recognising that Firmino has played a less significant role over the last 18 months, as TV's point out. But now, when we talk about Liverpool and their successes and that front three, okay, Firmino didn't feature as prominently over the last 12 or 18 months, but you had Diego Jota, you had Diaz coming in, now you have Sadio Mane moving on. And I just feel, in an effort for some continuity, you have Salah, who's still on board, you have Diaz and Jota, who've been as good as they have, Darwin Nunes coming in. I just feel that Firmino plays a role in the transition. That transition that every club with those kind of fixture players have to move on from it at some point. So while it may not be the truest words Jurgen Klopp has ever spoken, I think this is just fantastic man management by Klopp in a way that goes way beyond Firmino and his own role or lack of it over the next season.
Would you agree with that, Ian?
Yeah, I think Klopp's a fantastic man manager. We've criticised him moaning about schedules, but he really does know and love his players, and I think they love him back as well. Firmino's been a massively important player for Jurgen Klopp. Okay, he's not having the same impact and not getting as many minutes these days, and it'll probably be the same story for him this season. Now they've got Darwin Nunez, and of course Diaz has pushed himself somewhere near the front of the queue as well. There are a lot of choices there, but there are a lot of games for Liverpool as well, and Firmino, with his craft and know-how, can bring something different if it's proving to be one of those games where Liverpool are finding it just a tad difficult to break down the opposition, say, in a home game at Anfield. I've seen that where he's come on and he's just offering that little bit of something different by way of nous and craft. So he still has a role to play, even though it's not as important a role as it once was. And yeah, I mean, Klopp's right. He says he's the heart and soul of the club. And I think he really believes that. And I think the Liverpool fans believe it too. They love him.
Okay, well, we will see Liverpool and Man City back in action in the Community Shield coming off. That is the curtain raiser, as Ian said, for the Premier League season. You can catch it on Saturday, 11:30 Eastern on ESPN+. We'll see how rested some of these players are.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Over on the website, Tor Christian Carlsen wrote about the players under the most pressure this season. It's worth checking out. We also asked Gabriele Marcotti to do the same. We've asked him to pick five of the players that are under the most pressure in the upcoming season. And it's also his birthday as we welcome him in. So happy birthday, Gab. Great to have you with us. There he is. Happy birthday, Gab. Have you had a nice day?
A lovely day. Thank you.
Well, we've got a few questions about that.
Spoiled by this.
In extra time. I know, spoiled by this. No, this is the highlight of it. This is his birthday party. Yeah. All right, let's get underway then with us putting you to task again, Gab, getting you to give us that list of the players under the most pressure. I think we're starting with number five. Yes, we are. Who have you gone for number five under pressure this season?
Okay, so I have to say I disagreed with many of the guys on Tor's list, like Erling Haaland, but I won't get into that. For number five, I went with Sadio Mane because, look, he's changing teams, he costs a lot of money, and he's got to pick up the Robert Lewandowski slack. I think it is, it's the correct roll of the dice from Bayern, still a roll of the dice.
All right, we'll keep going through and then we'll get the panel's view. Number four, you've gone for Jack Grealish.
Grealish actually took the liberty of inserting somebody who's not on Tor's list. But I just think with the departures of Raheem Sterling and Gabriel Jesus, I think this means more minutes and more responsibility for Jack Grealish. Obviously, he cost, $100 million a year ago. And not that he didn't, you know, we allow a transition year, fine. But I think this is the year where he needs to kick on if that investment will have been worthwhile.
In at number three, it's Harry Maguire.
Yes, Harry Maguire. Look, he's got the confidence again of being club captain. It is a transition. The question is he going to remain club captain? Is he going to remain a key part of the Manchester United team that Erik ten Hag wants to build? There's no question that last season was difficult. And I think this season is going to help determine that.
Okay, as we're counting down now to the top, number two, Neymar.
Yes, Neymar, with Mbappe sticking around, and obviously Lionel Messi in his second season, Neymar is, sorry to tell you, he's third banana there in that front three. Obviously, he's got the World Cup, which is enormous for him. But you don't want to live with regret. And I think this is the season where, you know, between the World Cup and what he does with Paris Saint-Germain, especially in the Champions League, this is going to be the year where it's going to help form our opinion of how we're going to evaluate Neymar. Obviously, he'll be a year closer to the end of his contract as well, and that plays into it too.
And drum roll in at number one, it is Marcus Rashford. Why have you gone for Marcus Rashford?
Well, obviously, it's a contract year for him. That's absolutely huge. He's essentially playing for his future, whether it's going to be at Old Trafford or elsewhere. Last season, you know, he was in and out of the side. Is he a center forward? Is he a winger? What are Erik ten Hag's plans for him? He's got a lot of questions to answer. A lot of things, I think, are going to become clear. And then, of course, there's the England piece as well with Gareth Southgate, too. So I think this is really the biggest season of his career, at least in deciding what the next 4 or 5 years are going to look like for him.
What do you think of Gab's list, Stevie?
There's a lot of different ways of looking at the list. I think the two that are under the most pressure for me are Grealish and Maguire. No question, Harry Maguire is under the most pressure of all of them. Grealish the same because of what he hasn't done since he's been to Manchester City. The Mane one, I'm not quite sure, Gab, because he's not a centre forward. So I don't think people are thinking that he's going to go to Bayern and try and score 40 goals a season. I just don't see he's under that much pressure. Oh, yeah. The Neymar one, I don't really... I mean, Neymar is not, in my brain, he's not talked about or thought about or expected to do anything from a season after he landed at PSG because, quite frankly, the last, 3 years have been just a complete disaster and a waste of time. And I'm not sure he carries much weight. I just don't see it. And Rashford, I don't think Rashford's under pressure that much at all. I think Rashford is going to get... He's going to feel a little freer.
So you hate the list, basically.
I think Rashford pretty much has been written off by everybody. I don't expect Rashford to do anything for Manchester United. And I think he probably thinks that as well. I don't think there's pressure on Rashford. I think he's in a good spot because I don't think much is expected of him. I certainly don't. So I think he's in a good spot.
So you only like two names that...
I think Grealish and Maguire 100% are biting their nails before the season starts.
Well, let Gab
the
respond.
The others, I don't really see that.
Gab?
I think with Mane, it's more about what he represents, right? He represents this massive choice that Bayern Munich made, undoubtedly with Nagelsmann's input as well, where he says, give me another winger, we're going to attack in a different way. And, you know, we can put labels on him. Is he a winger? Is he a forward? Is he a center forward? Can he play in different roles? I don't know, but there's no question that I think he's a symbol of that huge decision that Bayern made. On Rashford, he's got a contract. He's going to need a new contract. You know, I don't see how that can't weigh in on your mind when at 18 you're the next big thing. And now a couple years later, it's not entirely clear that you're going to get, you know, the sort of new deal that you want and that you're going to be a part of Manchester United. This is a kid who's Manc through and through. He came through the ranks. He wants to do well. He's received all these accolades. And now there's a new manager. All right, fresh start. If he doesn't produce, if he doesn't produce this season for Manchester United, he may not be. He's not going to be back next year. He may not be offered a chance to be a part of it in the future, and I think that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on this young man. As for Neymar, Stevie from Bristol, Connecticut, maybe people don't talk much about him, but Neymar is absolutely central to Brazil and the World Cup as well, and I think. That comes with an absolute ton of pressure from the Seleção.
Let's hear from Neymar's biggest fan, Shaka Hislop, on what he thinks of his name being there.
As far as Neymar goes, I have to say I'm more in Stevie's camp than Gab, so I accept the point that Gab is making. As far as the list goes, fifth place could have gone to any of six players, and it's just a matter of how you look at that. I'm in full agreement with Gab around Rashford, Grealish, and Maguire, just the order, we could debate. But I'm, as far as Neymar goes, I'm with Stevie. I'll be honest, I'm not expecting much other than more of the same from Neymar, particularly for PSG. I get the Brazil thing, but even then, I'm not expecting a whole lot more than we saw four years ago. And Gab said, in Gab talking about Neymar, he said this is the season that he shapes our opinions around Neymar or opinions of his legacy in the game. And I disagree. I think this is a season that he can shatter opinions. I think opinions have been made. Everybody knows exactly what they think about Neymar, and this is an opportunity for him to shatter those, for him to put some of those criticisms to bed. But I'll be honest, I don't anticipate it. I don't anticipate anything more. The successes or failures around PSG, we'll discuss more Mbappe and Messi than it being about Neymar.
Can we get the Gabometer back?
Well, the birthday boy's smiling at what Shaq is saying there.
The Gabometer, right, Gab?
Go on.
What's the chances if Neymar's rotten again for PSG, what's the chances he doesn't go to the World Cup?
I think the chances are minuscule of Neymar not going to the World Cup.
It doesn't matter how he plays. So he's not under any pressure.
But if he's rotten,
then he's still going to the World Cup. So he's got the cigar again. I'm still going.
I think if you look at it in the context of Neymar's career and the fact that this guy was the anointed superstar when he was 18 years old and the pressure, the importance of delivering a World Cup to Brazil and the fact that Brazil are among the favorites for the World Cup, all of this generates an enormous amount of pressure, as well as the fact that obviously, you know, he got that new deal at Paris Saint-Germain. I don't believe he's going to get another one. All of these things have got to weigh on your head. And anybody who spent any time in Brazil will tell you that the pressure that Neymar and other Brazil players face is, you know, 100x what some of these other people are on the list. I mean, frankly, while I take the point about pressure on Jack Grealish to perform or whatever, you know what? We saw Jack Grealish is under pressure to perform at the last Euros, and we saw it this time, and he performs, he doesn't perform, whatever. Ultimately, life goes on. I think with Neymar, it's a little bit different just because of the sheer magnitude of Neymar compared to these other names on the list. And incidentally, that's why I didn't put Erling Haaland on the list either. Erling Haaland, to me, is a long play. If he has a difficult season under Pep Guardiola, you know what? He's on the hook. He's got the contract. He'll be back next season. We'll talk about adjustment to the Premier League, adjustment to Pep or whatever. I don't think there's an exorbitant amount of pressure on Erling Haaland related to some other people who are playing either for their legacy or they're playing for their careers right now.
Ian, I wanted to come to you on the Premier League players that Gab chose, Grealish, Rashford and Maguire. Or is there another name that sticks out for you under the players under the most pressure this coming season?
Not really, no. I think it's a good list that Gab's drawn up there. And happy birthday, Gab, as well. A couple of names I might add to it, I think, would be Lionel Messi. And Gab talked about the World Cup and the pressure on Neymar and how he's got to deliver. Messi still, I mean, Argentina have been on a great run and there'll be great expectations. Can he do it late in his career? Can he do what Maradona did and deliver a World Cup for Argentina? So maybe Messi is on that list as well, or around it anyway. And I'd add Robert Lewandowski as well, who's going to Barcelona. And, you know, all the problems surrounding them, which have been well documented on this program time and time again. He really has got to fill the role of the torchbearer and be the kind of goal scorer he's been so often for Bayern Munich. So maybe him too as well. I mean, those Premier League players on the list, yes. Grealish, I think first season, I think he struggled to make that transition from him being a main man at Aston Villa to being part of the chorus line at Manchester City. And I think he said himself he felt he was playing with the shackles on a bit. I think you'll see much more from him this season. The treatment of Maguire, I think, has been just despicable. I hope he has a great season.
Oh, that's good. Nice to hear. It's actually a perfect setup as well. You said, can he do what Maradona did and deliver the World Cup? Can Cristiano Ronaldo do what Maradona did and bring a title to Napoli? Because there is talk of Napoli being Cristiano Ronaldo's next club. Apparently, Jorge Mendes has offered his client to the Serie A side. When you look at the odds for his next club, Napoli are fourth in that list behind United, Atleti and Chelsea. Gab, could this actually happen, Ronaldo to Napoli?
I mean, I'm going to answer this the same way you answered the Atletico Madrid situation. This only happens if Cristiano takes an enormous pay cut, and I mean an enormous pay cut. Napoli are in a situation where obviously they didn't extend Lorenzo Insigne, the Dries Mertens situation has been drawn out forever. Zielinski, you know, there's strong suggestions he might be sold. Koulibaly, his contract wasn't extended, and so he was sold to Chelsea. So, you know, this is a team that right now has been moving in that direction of pulling back in terms of wages. So Obviously, Cristiano's not going to pay for free, but he certainly can't play for the amount of money that we're talking about. It would be a romantic decision, obviously. I don't know what his views are on Diego Armando Maradona playing in Maradona Stadium, playing in front of those fans. It would be Champions League football. Jorge Mendes does have close ties to that club. I have to say, it would be pretty mind-blowing were it to happen.
Stevie, on the other side of this, how much of a distraction is this whole saga for the United players back in the dressing room, knowing that he could be coming back?
Big time. Absolutely. There's no question they'll be thinking about it. The closer the season gets to the start, they'll be thinking, well, if he comes back a week before, which pretty much it is, does he play? If he does play, who's not playing? I've been slogging my guts out for the last 4 or 5 weeks. We've been doing all this training, we've been doing all this pattern play, we've been doing all this with a new manager, and as much as everybody likes Ronaldo, they'll all be thinking, who's not playing then? So absolutely, this is a cloud and a shadow over what Ten Hag's trying to do at Manchester United to start the season well.
What do you think, Shaka? Distraction in the dressing room too?
I think potentially, yes, absolutely can be. And listen, transfer speculation, even around players like Ronaldo, part and parcel of the game, and players get used to it. But I'll use one of Gab's phrases here. Ronaldo is a type of individual that takes up all the oxygen in the room. So you have to know whether he's going to be there or not. If he's on the pitch, you have to play it to him, and you have to figure out a system around him. If he's not, then things are very different. So that's not a good position to be in, well, a couple of weeks before the start of the season, where you're not quite sure exactly your formation. And then, as TV Riley points out, you've been working away all pre-season. And as much as late arrivals, again, part of the business, all the way up to the end of August, for him not to show up for pre-season while you're working away and this kind of playing off behind the scenes, it doesn't help. Let me just put it that way as subtly as I possibly can.
Let me stay with you then, Shaka. Do you think that he's got away with this a little bit? Do you think he should have been bashed more for this? The fact that it is so close to the start of the season, that maybe other players, if they were in this situation, let's put Neymar out there for example, if they were doing the same thing, would they get such an easy ride?
No, they wouldn't. And to that point, but... whether he should get bashed more, listen, I'd say as much as I say other players would get it a lot harder, a lot firmer than Ronaldo has, I'm also sympathetic to Ronaldo and this mess that he came into. I mean, what a difference a year makes. Remember how he was lauded after United kind of hijacked the move to Manchester City, and then quite clearly they didn't have a plan, and then United have just been awful all season long. And while Ronaldo remains one of the highest paid players in world football, you just couldn't help but feel sorry for him. So I'm going to show a little bit of my sympathetic side to Cristiano Ronaldo here.
Are you going to show your sympathetic side, Ian Dark?
No, not at all. I think he's trying it on here. Manchester United paying the price for not getting into the Champions League is one of the reasons why Frankie de Jong, I guess, doesn't want to go there either, although they've been courting him for, what is it, and it seems like about 25 years. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. No, I think he's trying it on, Cristiano Ronaldo. I think, he wants to go and play in the Champions League. I understand that, it's pride, but it's ego as well. He's being a bit of a prima donna. It's 9 days to the start of the season. Manchester United still don't know if they're top scorer, their main man up front from last season, is even going to be playing for them. So what the heck is going on here? Can somebody explain it? Because as I understand it, they'd like him to be in their attack. Now they're talking about maybe they'd let him go to Napoli. This is a bit more chaos at Old Trafford. The last thing Ten Hag needs, and he's trying to, reboot that whole feel and dynamic at Manchester United and make them a much, much different side to the terrible side they were last season.
Go on, Gab.
I don't know. There's just a couple of things here. First of all, in terms of all the players who worked hard, who might and lose their place in the side, Ben Ronaldo swans up. I'm sure you've all had teammates, and in Stevie's case, players who played for you, who were simply better than others, and who, even though they might have missed training or not worked hard, they're simply better. And they help you keep your job, and they help you win games, and they go in the lineup. And I think, in my experience, the footballers I've spoken to, ultimately, they, to some degree, they accept that. But as far as Cristiano's told, I'm kind of ignoring everything Ten Hag says because he has to say it. And I think from a team-building perspective, it makes sense for Cristiano to move on. Cristiano and his wages to move on from Manchester United. Cristiano reportedly wants to move on. And the reason this has been strung out all summer long, it's not because Cristiano's bad or evil or because Manchester United are bad or evil. It's just simply that to move somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo takes a very, very long time at this stage of his career because there aren't many landing places. So United, again, they're not. This is not what they're saying. It's what I believe they want to do is they want to give Cristiano every chance to find a home because they know that this is a multi-year process. They know that Cristiano does not fit Erik ten Hag's pressing game. They don't want to put Ten Hag in his first season in a position where he has to change everything that he wants to do to accommodate Cristiano. And they wouldn't mind, I think, saving on Cristiano's wages and investing that money on somebody else. So all these things put together, Cristiano and United, I think, want the same thing. The problem is, it's something that takes time and isn't easy to do.
There are limits. Gab's right when he says that players know when a guy's the best player, the guy's the best player. But there are limits to how far you can stretch that. And the one thing that will happen, if Cristiano Ronaldo walks through the door 9 days before the start of the season and walks straight into the team, Ten Hag is going to lose a lot of players. He's going to certainly lose a lot of respect. I don't care how good Ronaldo is or anybody else. When you've got somebody who walks in 9 days before the season kicks off and the new manager just turns round and says, OK, you're in, he's losing respect. No question.
All right, well, let's move on to talk about Ian Dark's Premier League predictions, shall we? We wonder where Manchester United are going to feature, given the optimism that you all had for them last season. Go on then, Ian.
Oh. Fourth.
Well, we've got to put in the rider here that we don't know yet the full squads, do we, for every team. Certainly in Manchester United's case, we don't know, is Ronaldo going to be there? Gap thinks he's going to be gone. I don't know. Look, there's nothing that original there. I think it's going to be another close race between Manchester City and Liverpool. Tottenham, you'd think the way that they've strengthened, although they've got the Champions League distraction now, might put in a much stronger run than we've seen from them. They could make third place. I'm guessing United are going to be different, more dynamic. They might respond to Ten Hag. I think he might come off. I think there's a collective will there to change things. So that's a speculative pick for putting them in fourth place. Chelsea, well, they're in flux, aren't they? So a bit lower. But look, what? That's the first stab.
Why are you laughing, Stevie?
He's been playing darts. United, oh, fourth.
You're not having it.
Oh, I'm not having that one, sorry.
Why not?
Why? Are they any better today than they were the last time they kicked the ball in the last season? I don't think so.
Did you go for them in the top four last season?
I did last season.
Why not this season?
Well, because they were, what, sixth this last season?
Right.
And they,
so things
and,
can only get
in
better.
In my opinion, they haven't done anything to suggest they're going to be any better. So why would they be in the top four?
Well, we will be reminding you of your Premier League predictions, all of you, come the end of the season, and we'll see who got it right and who got it wrong. Always a good thing to do. And it's always great to get your questions in on Extra Time. We'll have Gab, Stevie and Shaka with us for the latest edition. You can check it out over on our YouTube page. And you can catch the boys for the coverage of Huddersfield Town against Burnley. It is the opening game of the Championship season. It's going to be on ESPN2 Friday, 2:55 p.m. Eastern. Dan and the boys will be with you to bring you all the build-up to that one and the live game itself. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Ian Dark, the voice of the Women's Euro 2022 on ESPN. It's been a brilliant run so far. The final is coming up on Sunday. It's Germany against England. What stood out to you so far, Ian, on all those games?
I just think the whole tournament has been illuminating, really. It's been like a light bulb moment, I think, for women's football. I've bumped into a lot of people who said, I've never really watched it before. I didn't really believe in it, but isn't it good? And they're thoroughly enjoying it, and enjoying it, I think, as families as well. It's a different feel to what we're used to. Those of us who follow the men's game for most of the time, but it's pretty clear that now they can really play, that the level is very good, the games have been competitive, and of course that backheeled goal from Alicia Russo, who keeps coming on and scoring for England, everybody's talking about that because it's the goal of the tournament. You know, this is really just a piece of magic improvisation. I think any guy, Lionel Messi, would have been happy with that, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen so many goals throughout the tournament, and England alone have scored 20 themselves, Ian. Where does Alessia Russo's goal rank in this tournament?
I think number one. I think that has to be the number one, doesn't it? That's the first one on the show reel. The final's going to be good, isn't it? Because England keep banging in goals. They've had some difficult moments, certainly against Spain, and to a lesser extent, certainly in the early stages against Sweden. Germany will have taken good notice of that. If they start as slowly as game, Germany could take advantage. They're a very well organised side who know how to win. So I see it as a 50-50 final. Of course, it's the marquee final, isn't it? Really, I think it's the most neutrals and certainly the England fans wanted, probably the German ones as well. And there's going to be close to 90,000 people at Wembley on Sunday to see it. And it's going to be live on ESPN as well. So great.
Is it coming home, Ian? That's what I'm interested. What's the feeling back in England? Because there's one where there's all this optimism and it's been a brilliant run for the Lionesses. But then so many generations know what happens when England meet Germany. They've had heartbreak when it gets to the later stages of tournaments. What's the feeling back home?
Yeah, well, there's all the hype, of course, there is about what might happen, and there'll be the stories, about 1966, England-West Germany, 1996, when the Germans won on penalties in the semi-final of Euro 96. And, of course, last year, England played Germany at the Euros and this time won. So probably the cliched ending to the story will be a penalty shootout at Wembley on Sunday night. Not sure anybody's nerves will be able to take that.
Yeah, great. That'll be wonderful to watch and go through. No, it's going to be a wonderful final, and it's been great to hear you all the way through it, Ian. You can catch Ian and Julie Foudy again on the call for this game, England against Germany, the final of the Women's Euro. Coverage begins at 11:30 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN+, and the game kicks off at noon.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, that is it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. But the good news is, Shaka, Stevie, myself, and Gabriele Marcotti, the birthday boy,
are
back to answer your question for next time. Absolutely not. See you in a minute.
Bit hard.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Marie and Stevie Nicol here in the studio. We're joined by Shaka Hislop and birthday boy Gab Marcotti. Happy birthday, Gab. Avoiding the question of how old he is earlier when Stevie was asking him, by the way.
I can't believe they've not let you go, Gab. Seriously.
He wanted to have a party with us on Extra Time.
Yes, at this stage, we do most of celebration during the day. It's... Oh, you know what about my 12-year-old? She made a cake from scratch, so I will be sure to WhatsApp you a photograph, Shaka, so you can enjoy the cake virtually.
I wanted to compare to Sadio Mane's cake, but your daughter, your 12-year-old making you a cake beats anything that Bayern can produce cake-wise. So need, you win, Gab. You were the cake wars.
First question's for him as well. Happy birthday, Gab. If Stevie invited you to his house for a birthday dinner with a birthday toast given by Dennis Bergkamp, would you go?
Again with the Bergkamp stuff.
Would you go?
There's no accounting for taste. We often... Of course I would go. Of course I would go. I mean, I don't know if that would happen. I'm not sure, unless Dennis Bergkamp traveled to Stevie's house by boat, I guess, because I don't think he'd be flying. But yes, of course. And I would be delighted and honored to be a guest at Stevie and Eleanor's house once again.
He had to get the little dig in, didn't he, about Bergkamp being afraid of flying. That's what happens when you don't like
somebody. Not a dig!
Of course he does.
All right. Considering it's Gab's birthday, what better than allowing him to give a full-fledged explanation on financial fair play?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
I only do that when Craig is around. You know that. If it's not a Craig wind-up, it's not worth it.
I mean, it is our birthday every day when you're on, Gab, especially if Craig Burley's on. Stevie's just rolling his eyes at me.
You come up with that yourself, I can assure you. Nobody else was thinking it.
Ski wants some of Gab's cake.
Yeah. All right, question for Shaka. Why do you think players are choosing Barca over Chelsea for better project, despite Chelsea offering better wages? And also, Xavi is still new to this managerial role. So, is it that the players trust in Tuchel fading off?
I find the way that players are turning on Chelsea really, well, it's both surprising and concerning from a Chelsea perspective. Listen, it's clear that Barcelona are still a big draw as a football club, despite the shenanigans that they've put us through over the last couple of years with their financials, etc., etc. Playing for Barcelona is still huge, quite clearly. So I understand and sympathize. You know, I understand players choosing Barcelona, even with their issues. The way that players are turning down Chelsea, seemingly wantingly, is That for me is a big surprise. Tuchel continues to, in my mind, to be one of the best managers in world football. Chelsea, one of the biggest clubs in world football. I know there's new ownership, so I don't know why that is put in doubt, and that should put doubt in the players' heads. I just can't understand it.
What say you, birthday boy?
You said the question says players. I think it should really say player, as in singular, because Christensen doesn't fit the bill, because, you know, the relationship with Chelsea ended well before he moved. The Lewandowski link was kind of nonsense all along. So you're really talking about Jules Koundé. Frankly, if I'm already in Spain,
Rafinha linked with Chelsea as well?
I'm not sure how progressed the Rafinha thing was, to be perfectly honest. But again, if I'm Rafinha, yeah, I would rather go to Barcelona. If your aim is Champions League football, if your aim is exposure, I think for next season there's a greater chance that Barcelona will get to the Champions League than Chelsea. Just simply because of the level of competition from other clubs in the Premier League relative to where Barcelona sit. It's a phenomenal stadium, it's a phenomenal fan base, it's a phenomenal city. I'm not saying London isn't like that, but I think you kind of have to go through case-by-case analysis. Beyond that, you start weighing up the history, then obviously it's going to be no contest.
Who would you choose if you were playing now and you had the choice between Barcelona and Chelsea with exactly how they stand now as clubs?
Barcelona.
Why?
Well, I think Xavi's a big part of it. I think the fact that they've got so many great young players.
Even with less money, though, this would still be Barcelona.
I mean, Gab just said it, you know. No question Barcelona's going to win the Champions League. No, there's actually a good possibility, if you look at the squad they have, that they could win La Liga. You look at Chelsea, you don't see them winning the Premier League, you don't see them winning the Champions League. So, yeah, it's Barcelona. And as far as, you know, players, I guess I can only talk to myself, but you look at the Barcelona thing, and I think most players just say to themselves, these guys will sort it out with the money. They don't really overthink about stuff like that. And clearly, the fact that so many players have gone to Barcelona while they're in the middle of supposedly not having a penny or a cent or whatever you want to call it. So players just go, you know what? They'll figure it out. Somehow, some way, they'll get it done. I'll get my money. So I'm going to Barcelona.
All right. For Gab, where would you rank Roma's front three of Zaniolo, Dybala and Abraham amongst the other clubs in Serie A?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think we're going to need an acronym. Maybe DAZ, because they're going to dazzle under Mourinho. Look, I think you have to start with the premise, are they going to be all fit? Obviously, Dybala's had major fitness issues. Zaniolo missed the entire season 2 years ago. Last year was stop-start. I think in terms of talent, in terms of what their ceiling is, when they're all fully fit, for me, they're right up there. I mean, you know, they're ahead of Milan. I think potentially ahead of Inter too, if they're all at 100%. In Juve, you have certainly the Chiesa question mark. So, yeah, their ceiling, I think, is as high as anybody's in Serie A.
Xhaka. The city of Newcastle has treated you very well recently, despite your West Ham loving ways. On the final day of the season, if it was between West Ham or Newcastle getting into the top seven European football, who would you openly support?
Yeah, no. We'll make it a top four.
I thought he froze him. He was pretending
seven.
That he'd frozen. So he didn't have to answer.
I'm neutral entirely. I'm like Switzerland in this case.
Hang on.
Totally neutral.
Top four.
No, but did East London give you an honorary doctorate?
What?
Yeah.
Or the keys to the area?
My internet is freezing, Kay. Tony, what's going on?
That is absolute champion fence sitting, is.
In all honesty, right, okay, let me.
You know he's not true.
I have to say, going back to Newcastle as I have over the last couple of months, as I've fallen in love with that city again. I haven't been back to Newcastle since I left England. And I've fallen in love with that city all over again, I have to say.
Because you went out partying there.
I'm a little bit torn right now. I'm torn.
So we're still on the fence.
There's the North East is a lovely place, Kay.
I know.
That's
a little bit further south, even nicer than where you are. Oh, I can't believe he's fence sitting.
I'll challenge that, but we all know there's only one city in the Northeast, really. Everybody knows that.
Because we're not really a city. All right. Stevie, what's your stand on getting nose hair waxed by a barber? Did you see Don talking about this?
No.
He didn't even know it was called wax, by the way.
No. I'm surprised his nose is still hanging on to his face.
Why wouldn't you try that?
Because there's a lot easier ways of getting rid of it.
Like what?
Just get a little electric wee razor and just clip them off. Easy. No
but
pain.
You can get all no pain?
No.
Doesn't it always hurt?
No. Instead of getting half your face potentially ripped off with some stupid wax or something.
I want to go around actually on this one. Gab, have you ever had your nose waxed?
No, I haven't. I'm 100% with Stevie on this one. And in case people are wondering about this, the reason you may prefer waxing to electric for those hairy situations is that the electric can cause redness and irritation potentially, but the point is it's inside your nose, so unless you're extremely creepy, nobody's ever going to see it if you do develop some redness or some cuts, some little nicks, and it's going to go away. And no, it's not painful, plus you don't even have to do it all the way. You just have to kind of reduce the freakishly long ones that might protrude from your nose.
We're walking in a cave, isn't it? You just go to the front of it and then run back out.
Shaka!
Yeah, exactly.
You ever done it?
I'm with Gab and Steve in that I've never had it done. Saying that, I've got quite some nostrils on me here, Kay. I'm not sure that there are cotton swabs big enough for my nose. All these ears, for that matter. So I'm not sure that they have the equipment at hand. I'll give it a go. I'll try it. My only concern, right, and I use the clippers as well, like everybody else, is
that
those hairs grow back quick. That you clip them up one day, and then 2 days later, they're all hanging out your ears again. How long? When you
that's
wax it, when
you
wax
it,
like
from the
like,
roots.
I tell you what, Shaggy, beats try to grow a new nose.
How long does it? How long does it stay away? That's my question. How long before you have to wax them again?
I can't answer that because I've never waxed my nose. But we can ask Don next time he's on because he's a fan.
Let Stevie go have it done and put it to the test.
No. I think we should do an ESPN FC group nose wax. Would you be up for that?
Oh, you can do it.
No. I think it should be the men because it's more of a man thing, you know? All right. Is Stevie going to spend $200 on Gab's cake?
No, my wife probably would, though. And Gab deserves a nice cake.
Well, he got a nice cake off his daughter. But you're not going to spend $200 on one for him?
No. Do you?
Yeah, he's got one already. All right. Last question. What is Gab's favourite birthday meal and what is he having tonight? Or what did you have tonight, Gab?
So it was kind of, we went to this great restaurant I like here in London called Temper. I was in the move. They have one of those fancy Jasper ovens. The thing is, the menu is a little bit unusual. And this has actually never happened to me before in a restaurant. The waitress comes out. And because the menu's, it's a lot of barbecue stuff, and then there's sort of some Nouvelle Mexican stuff with tacos and whatever and brisket. And I said, like, oh, we're going to need your help with the menu. And she says, yes, I'm happy to sort it. And then she kind of walks away. And then she comes back and she said, like, oh, look, I've ordered you this, 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 that, and that. Which was not what I wanted. I just wanted her to tell me what the things on the menu were so that I could then make a decision, not have her go and order us half the menu. This has literally never happened to me before in a restaurant. And again, the food was good. And I don't want to get her in trouble. But equally, you know, she didn't know how much we were going to spend. It was just such a weird thing. I don't know if it's ever happened to any of you that, you know, you're unsure about something in the menu and the waiter's like, yeah, don't worry, I'll order for you. You know, I know best.
That's weird, isn't it? Imagine if that happened to Stevie.
Oh, no. I would not be as polite as probably Gab was and kept his mouth closed, clearly. I definitely would have something to say about it.
What did you say, Shaka?
I said, I have a wife to order for me. I don't need any further help than that.
Trust me. Just to end, someone once brought Stevie beef tartare and he didn't know how it came. They didn't want to say anything. So they had to throw it away and pretend they didn't.
Took some of it, my wife put some in a napkin and put it in the bag because there was that much yet. We didn't want to throw it all over the wall next to us.
Oh. That's disgusting, eh, Gav? I bet you'd eat the beef tartare.
It is. We were sitting there and we're going,
I do like my beef tartare, to be fair, yes.
Oh, anyway, that's it for the latest edition of Extra Time. Thanks so much for your questions and happy birthday, Gab Marcotti.
Thank you.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.